Hey, Podnotians, I want to apologize for the audio quality from Mini PC Episode 71. Hopefully, Mini PC Episode 72 will be back up on their normal audio quality standards.
Hello, mini PCers out there over the interwebs. Welcome to episode 61 of the Mini PC Show. And Brian, how the heck are you?
Fantastic, guys. I'm doing pretty good. I'm always doing good. How are you guys doing? It's been a long time since I've seen you.
Yeah, I've been like bursting at the seams to talk mini PC. This is my favorite podcast, and it's not just because I'm on it. How you doing, Dor?
I'll say I'm normal crazy, man. The temperature here has been literally ballistic. We went from snowing at least like 2 inches 4 days ago to 72 degrees. And it's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to wear every day. It's like a new thing. And I keep telling my kid, no, you don't need a coat. Just put on a jacket. What are you talking about? So I finally convinced him. Then he put on a jacket and then he came home and he said he was sweating. So
yeah. Yeah, that's kind of like Florida. The indoors, they, you know, say summer in Florida, the AC in a restaurant or a mall or whatever, it's like 60 freaking degrees, or at least it feels that way. But outdoors, you know, it'll be mid-80s, and, you know, you're fine.
So yeah, I witnessed that very thing 2 weeks ago in Podfest or Lando. Every single restaurant we went into, I swear it was 60 degrees except for one, which was BJ's Brewhouse, where it was literally like 74 degrees and it felt perfectly fine.
So is there a new door-to-door geek talking about the adventures in Orlando?
Well, I mean, I went there. I had fun.
Aha, there is DDG 11, Podfest Orlando. I'll have to listen.
Yeah, I went down there. I had a fun. Technically, now I am a award-winning podcaster, but it's not for a good reason.
Did you give yourself an award?
No, the guy behind the podcast conference, Chris, gave me an award for the worst pronunciation. I can't even say that. The worst pronunciation of his name ever. So obviously, I deserved the award.
You know, we haven't done this over Hangout, so it is fun seeing you guys live.
Yeah, I'll just put it like this. And I know Rich has heard me say this at least once. I used to always say, you don't have to know anything about Linux to come to a Linux conference. And that is true. It's very true. You don't go to a Linux conference to learn things or to teach other people about Linux. You go to Linux conference to interact with other people. Nerds is really it. That's really it. Podfest Orlando is more true. You don't have to know anything about podcasting to go there and be a normal person and have a hell of a lot of fun, because literally 80% of the people I talked to didn't even have a podcast. 80% of them said, I'm going to launch one next week. I'm going to launch one next month. I'm launching one in May. But they didn't have any yet. So when I say you don't need to have a podcast to come to that event, I mean you do not need to have any podcast to come to that event.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And I don't know if the people know what's going on here, but Orlando's 2.5 hours north of the Hughes Compound Southern Command. Unfortunately, I am currently 19 hours north of the Hughes Compound Southern Command. So Dor and I traded places. He went south, I went north.
Yeah, because trust me when I tell you now, Rich, the only thing that would have made that weekend better would have been if you would have been able to stop by and I could have bought you a steak dinner, because there was a couple good steak places right around the corner.
Well, I always enjoy drinking with a door, and better yet if it's with steak, so.
Yeah, and I am looking.
Steak, meat.
Yeah, I know. Good meat, beef. There was an event that my buddy Jonathan Adu did tell me about up in Cambridge, Boston area. But I think I just missed it. I don't think it's coming again until for like another 10 months. So I'm going to try to find out when that is, Brian, and I'll let you know as soon as possible.
Okay. One of my fun conference memories was you and Jonathan at NELF, like I guess the last NELF. I don't know who was drunker at what time and who was leading who around, but the two of you together were just way fun.
Well, I have no problem saying he knows that city better than I did with being able to see. Yeah, I will say really
quick, I'm interested in some of the other podcasts that you got, the other gentleman were thinking about starting. You had mentioned a few other guys that you were bumped into didn't have their podcasts set up yet. Was there a wide variety of different shows, or were they kind of the same theme, same genre?
I'll say none of them I talked to were close to the same niche. One guy was about long-term real estate investing. One of them was somebody who reviewed government documents and then talked about how they interpreted them. One was about a DJ and all the equipment he had and how he got to do it. One was about a movie producer or a movie editor, I guess, a high-end video editor who actually did stuff like commercials. He wanted to talk about that. And it just kept going. One of them was a older woman, literally like 70, because that was the one thing about this conference. There were people of all ages, of all races, of all cultures, of all everything. There was one who was literally like a 60-plus-year-old woman who wanted to do a podcast for a nursing home to help the older people understand basic stuff about technology and keep them up on news events.
That's interesting. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, anything you could think of as being something that you could push out via audio content, it seemed like somebody there had an idea to want to do something like it. Yeah, it was a hell of a lot of fun.
That's interesting.
I already can't wait to go back next year, to be honest. Okay, really quick, we do have a brand new Patreon. I have not done any charges yet, I believe. I'm going to do that here any second now. I'm going to sort it by date. The latest one is Tim. Tim works with me. Tim is an unbelievably hardworking man, number one. Number two, he's a government employee. I can't believe he can afford to give any money away. So, wow, is all I got to say. Wow. Thank you very much, Tim. Before that, we have John. Then we're down to Aaron, UK Treats, William Gale, and John Hollinger. I want to thank all you guys for your support, being Patreons. We do have some emails to go over, and I'll say first, Rich, is there any one of these emails you wanted to talk about more than another?
Yeah, hey, sure. First off, I want to like shout out to John Hollinger, one, for supporting, you know, Podnuts, and two, he does support me directly, which I greatly appreciate. And I haven't made this offer to him, but maybe I'm going to hook up with him, and if he lets me cook, I'll cook him a filet mignon with a red wine reduction. So he is in the neighborhood, so we're probably going to hook up sometime soon. In as far as emails, the one about, let's see, guy was talking about, where was he talking about doing pies as like pie top devices or for a classroom, and he wanted time sync?
That one was from Josh. He does, and I don't even know how to classify it. He does the kind of work that we all hear about on TV, but he goes to other countries and helps set up environments for education. Yeah, that one was, email was titled Raspberry Pies and Such.
I'm still dragging through here to find it.
I can paste it here in the chat if you want, Rich.
Just found it. Okay, so I'll read this one. So Josh says, hey guys, everyone's doing well. First off, let me say that I'm really enjoying listening to the show. There is great banter, even some useful information. I'm like, we give some information too? Dord mentioned a project that I'm part of a few months back called Internet in a Box. Right now I'm working on developing a version of it for Myanmar. Okay. As it will be heading there in March to deploy two computer labs in rural schools that we built. I don't know if he means the schools or the labs or both. The entire lab consists of offline content, Internet in a Box on a Pi 3, 10 to 20 Raspberry Pi client machines. My question for anyone in the show listening to this, does anyone know of the best RTC, which is real-time clock, to use with a Pi? As these are offline, it is beneficial to have a method of timekeeping. We set up a computer lab about a year ago, and we used some cheap DS3231s. DS is Dallas Semiconductor. I forgot who they were bought by. They were bought by somebody, Microchip, I believe. And RTCs, which is real-time clock, from AliExpress using the Podnuts affiliate link, of course. Thank you. And the results have been very spotty with these, however. As this is an all-volunteer donation-driven price needs to be kept as low as possible, here are a couple of links for the project and the charity I work with, if anyone is interested. And I guess we ought to put that in the show notes, right? We accept donations, and as well as if anyone has any spare cash for donating heaps of cash to the show and Podnuts Network. Well, that's very nice. So I kind of addressed, we had a couple of emails going back and forth about the real-time clock, and I don't know if everybody knows this, but modern computers, like your modern desktop computer, even your laptop, but I know modern desktop computers for short, you have a CR2023, which is a coin cell battery, and believe it or not, they're rechargeable. So if you have one that goes dead, you could actually recharge it if you wanted. And the important thing about that is when your computer is completely powered off, unplugged from the wall, there's a real-time clock that's running off that. And that keeps typically keeps your BIOS settings also. So in, let's see, I'd have to look, but I know definitely on the upboard, there's a little coin cell shrink-wrapped and wired into the upboard to power the real-time clock. And I'm guessing also in the up squared, which I've got running right behind me, but it's in the printed case, so I can't take a look. So there's a couple of issues with real-time clocks and how we do things and how data is provided for that. So I'm going to scroll down so I can read my replies. So first thing I suggested is instead of setting up real-time clocks for each machine and worrying about syncing them, if you set up NTP as a service on the machine, so you have the Internet in a Box Pi 3, and you have that as the NTP, that would help you out. And so then he was talking about, hey, how do I get the clock for the NTP? And I suggested, well, GPS always has a clock, get a GPS module. And then he's like, well, GPS modules are expensive. And I found a number of links in for cheap GPS units. And the other thing is, I'll tell you what, I hate waste of any kind. And I have every phone I've ever owned, every cell phone I've ever owned. So your cell phone, you've got a GPS in there, and if you had an old cell phone and a way of hacking it together, you could use that as a satellite-based real-time clock because the GPS signal has the time encoded in it. So I think we closed out. The cheapest thing I found was like a $9. Oh, yeah. So the SDR radio that I use for the PiAware, which is SDR, it's a TV tuner dongle, so USB TV tuner dongle, and you can do a bunch of different things with, because it's software-defined radio. You can actually tune GPS with that. Haven't done it, but it's possible. So I had a couple of links for that. So it's possible you could get away with, doing a real-time clock setup set by the GPS, so it's crazy accurate for about $9.
Yeah, I'll say, if all the computers are local to each other, then you can do the NTP server thing. But he didn't specify, and I'm afraid these computers aren't physically close to each other nor on the same network. So I just keep thinking about a small little daughter board and a battery is probably, I would think, the most economical solution if they're all separate. But if they're close enough, I like the idea of having one communication channel out just for GPS to set the clock, and then having the NTP server on the main one, and just during boot, going to that server and getting the time, and then bang, it should all be synced.
So he said two computer labs, and he said Internet in Box on a Pi 3 and 10 to 20 Raspberry Pi client machine. So it does sound like it's a client-server setup. Because I read quick and, you know, I read what I want to hear or I hear what I want to. Anyhow, however that works. So, yeah, I always want to make sure I'm correct. I always try to read something when there's specifications several times to make sure I got it right.
Yeah, so this would be a good case if you don't want to use another Raspberry Pi, even if the Raspberry Pi Zero, you could get something even cheaper like a Nano Pi Neo, like a $6 one. Connect that GPS module to it and just use it as a NTP server, syncing all the times up. I think that would probably be one of the best cost-effective solutions because $9 for the GPS unit, $9 after shipping, I'm going to say, so $18 total dollars. I think that's a fair price.
Well, I was thinking his Pi and Internet in the Box Pi would be the NTP server also, but you just have to put it close to a window so it picks up the GPS.
Very cool, very cool. Did you have any input towards that, Brian?
No, I don't. I was actually kind of thinking along the same lines. I think the using the phone idea is a pretty good solution, especially if you have an older phone that's not being used at that time. But no, I think you guys really covered all the bases on that one.
Very cool, very cool. And this is Josh. He goes up to Northwest Linux Fest Northwest. So I'm going to see him in like 2 or 3 months, hopefully. The website was 100schools.org is the main domain, and the first lab build is 100schools.org/new-projects-3. I'm going to make sure both of those links are in the notes.
Yeah, and I'm bad. I'm only clicking on those links now.
I understand. Equally as bad, I'll say. This next email is from Gregory. It says, I just have a quick question about powering a bunch of mini PCs. Like probably a bunch of your listeners, I have a growing collection of mini PCs doing various jobs. Typically, I just get the standard wall wart that supplies enough power for the device and leave it at that. However, in my network closet, in air quotes, I have several Raspberry Pis doing various jobs. I have a wall wart for each of them. I'm just wondering if any of you guys have made use of the various smart USB chargers to power more than one mini PC at a time. I'm just wondering if the smart part would keep it from supplying enough power when needed. By a smart USB charger, I'm talking about one of these, and the link I got from him from Amazon said sorry. I'm going to try it again. Nope, can't find it. So it might have been taken off of Amazon since then. I know I have experience with a smart charger. Mine was a Aukey, which is one of those big brand ones. I got off Amazon. I mean, I believe it was actually, it was either Amazon Review Trader or I got it just off of a sale where it was literally like $6, where it has 5 ports. All of them supply up to, I believe it is 2.7 amps. So it can power all of my stuff without hesitation. I know you had input on this one, Rich.
Yeah, I just got one a couple of days ago. So I am at the Hughes Outpost Midwest Command, and we're kind of on, bearskins and stone knives out here. So I did have a couple of Raspberry Pis, and I was running them. And the stupid phone chargers, and, I'm using a high-quality phone charger, but I would see the lightning bolt in the corner quite often. And what I did is I just looked for whatever was on sale. I included link and sent it to him. Found like a 5-port, 2-amp per port unit for sale and got it. And I'm only running 2 Raspberry Pi 3s on it right now. And that's running pretty good. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, it says right now currently unavailable. How much did you pay for this? Do you remember?
Oh, hold on. I got my Amazon screen up.
Okay, and in the description, it does say it does 2.4 per port. You always want it to do at least 2.1. I believe that's the bare minimum for even the Raspberry Pi 2.
Okay, so this was, it says currently unavailable. It was like $14.98, so it was $14.
Yeah.
The one I have at my house at the Hughes Compound Southern Command is the Rav Power. So this guy is 5-port, so 50-watt, 10-amp, so that's, 2 amps per port. that's decent. Like Doris said, you want like two, let's see, adaptively charges all 5-volt USB, including Android devices, at up to 2.4 amps. I'm assuming if you have 5 devices pulling 2 amps, that's the limit. You're not going to get 2.4 out of all of them. So if you don't use all of the ports, you're going to have extra amperage kicking around. So I can't say, hey, run 5 Raspberry Pis off it, but I can say 2 run fine. And when you think about it, if you're buying something for $15 where I don't know what a USB wall wart cost, but if I could run 3 or 4 of them off it, I'm pretty happy. Plus only using 1 power connector. So depending on what kind of closet you have going on where you have your stuff, and the bird's getting aggravated here.
Yeah, that's what I like. Anything AUKI or RAV power, in my opinion, is a good buy. They don't seem to be overpriced. And as long as you make sure they supply at least 2.1, my logic is I always try to get at least 2.1 per every port. If it says the total amount of amps on the whole device, and then if I divide it by 2.1, you know what I mean? I hope I come out with that number of ports or more. Early on in my buying, I did buy one that was lower, and yes, it had like 4 ports, Rich, and I could power, I think it was 2 Pis, and then when I tried to do the third is when I started getting the lightning bolt up in the corner, and that was literally like a $3 one, so all I had to do was upgrade to the normal quality of one.
Yeah, the power is definitely an issue with the Raspberry Pis, and I would tend to go for a better quality device, and I do have a tendency to go cheap on stuff when available, but that you probably want to go, you know, find something decent.
Right. Now, how much would you spend normally for something decent, Rich?
You know, I just closed my tab because the device I have at home is the RAV Power, and any RAV Power product I've been very happy with. But that I think I picked up on a sale last time.
Yeah, I'll say if it's 4 ports, I don't want to spend more than 20. If it's 5 ports, I can see going up to 25, maybe. If it's 6 ports, I could almost see spending up to 30. But I rarely see more than 5 ports on these that have enough amperage to power them all up. So if you spend more than 20, I would be shocked unless you want expedited shipping.
Okay, so I just looked it up in my order history. So the RAV Power 40 watt 4 port. So, hold on, 4 times 5 is 20. So that's a stink load of wattage. That was $15.29. I think I got a deal on that. I don't think if you looked for the same one right now, it'd be that price. And it's not. It's $21.99.
Well, that's not bad. I was in the same market just a little while ago, looking for something to power my multiple Pis at the same time. I think the max I was looking for was about 4 of them. But I was getting really specific in trying to find if the actual product could tell me how much voltage I was going to get out of the USB ports per port. And that was kind of difficult to find. Instead of like you said, instead of taking the actual number that they were giving me, the voltage, and kind of dividing it up per port, but specifically what the wattage was or the voltage was on each port. That was very specific, and some products could tell you, some products didn't tell you. I found that very interesting.
So what you want to know is the total wattage. So first off, USB is 5 volts. So if it's 4 ports and 40 watts, basically, that's giving you 10 watts per port. So 10 divided by 5 is 2. So you're getting, 2 amps per port, typically. So if you're using all of them. What it's saying here on this particular one is there's a quick charge 3.0 port, and the other ports are 2.4 amps, which maybe not continuous 2.4 amps because it's only 40 watts, but again, I've had no issues with it, so I'm happy.
Very cool. We have one more email, if one of you guys wanted to read it, from Tim.
Brian, are you doing the read? Does Brian hear us?
Oh, sorry about that. No, go ahead. Go ahead, Rich.
All right, I got a legal disclaimer separate from that. Okay, so Tim says, I saw this featured on another site whose link took me to Amazon. Mission USB power cable for Amazon Fire TV eliminates the need for AC adapter. I've heard you talk about RAV power UPS for the mini PC, but I have been unable to find any sort of backup made by RAV power. They have plenty of power banks, but none specifically say they will provide power while being charged. This little device has one battery, so the only sites mention of 2,000 milliamp hour would be pretty good guess. I guess this might be enough for a mini PC like Raspberry Pi or Pine 64, long enough for you to log on and do a normal shutdown during a blackout. Now, Dor, how long have you had? Didn't you have something running on a RAV power and it ran for 15 hours or more?
Oh yeah, my original one I bought sitting right here connected to my Banana Pi Pro, and I've went without power for more than a day, and it still is up and running. It goes over 24 hours, and it's powering the Banana Pi Pro and a external 2.5-inch SSD SATA hard drive. Here's the dirty secret. Tim's going to hear this after the fact. I actually bought a second one of these for my trip to go down to Orlando, so I had one that can be charged and discharged at the same time. I have no idea why, in the description, it doesn't make it completely clear that it can be charged and discharged. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk up to Tim's desk, and I'm going to leave it on his desk and just walk away. And then he'll listen to the show and say, what the hell is this? I'll say right now I don't need it. So you can take it, Tim. You can test it. You can play with it. And if it works for you, then you can go on Amazon and buy one for $25. But looking at the description, I don't see where it says charge and discharge at the same time. I literally stumbled across, it was some British guy or UK guy who said he bought literally like 100 of them trying to find one that could charge and discharge. And this was the cheapest one he found that could actually do it. Yeah, I mean, it says it has iSmart technology, which isn't it. It says MCU, control and stabilize current output, enable up to this consistent current output during charge. Okay, so here's where it says MCU, control and stabilize current output, enable up to 2.1 amp/2.4 amp consistent current output during charging or 4.5 amp total charge. So it can output 2.4 at the same time as it is charging, so it's stable with my Banana Pi Pro, and it can do both at the same time. So that's how I got what I got. But they don't say it right to make it naturally discoverable if you search Amazon.
Yeah, the RAV Power is definitely like my... I got one right now because I probably... Green Bay is such a nice town. If I called the airport, they'd probably be like, oh, yeah, we've had in our lost and found forever. but, yeah, you know, they're not going to pay to ship it to me. So basically, it's theirs if they want it. Yeah, when the checks start coming in, I'll probably pick up another one, just to have it around.
Yeah, it's my go-to. I have the second one. I really only need one, is my logic. This is like pro induction and test and development. Development, you don't need battery backup on. If I'm in the middle of development and power goes out, oh well. But production, I would like to keep up and running. So I'm only going to use it on my main Pi device. And literally, they're less than $30 or $25. If you are running a server on a mini computer that you need to have up for a reason, I do. Other people rely on this server. I have other hosts on the network who rely on this server as a way to sync data across without having to put it on any kind of public cloud infrastructure. Instead, you put it on Dor cloud infrastructure. So I need it up and running all the time. They don't know when my power goes out. I have people in different countries who use it. So I need it up and running the whole time. So to me, $25 is a no-brainer.
Hey, you know, speaking of power up all the time, so the data center in a drawer I have has a UPS, and I ended up putting larger UPSs on everything. And what I ended up doing, and so this is a question for Brian, I had a distribution amp for the cable in my crawl space in my attic, or the rafter space, and I put the UPS on that, because I did notice when the power went out, even though everything was powered, I would lose internet connection, and I'm guessing it's because the distribution amp wasn't powered. Is that so? Is that how it works, Brian?
We don't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
So I'm wondering if there's like a quick hesitation when you lose power, or is that simultaneous?
No, what I'm asking is for my internet that's provided by Verizon, provided by Xfinity, Comcast, with the distribution amp, if the power goes out on the DA, boom, my cable's out. Is that how it works? I mean, my internet service?
Typically, that's not. That shouldn't be how it works. If your plant or your neighborhood is run on DC power, the entire cable plant or system should be run on DC power. So when you lose commercial power, those nodes that's feeding you service should stay up and running. But if the batteries aren't good enough or if they're not fully charged, then everything's going to drop and it's going to go out.
But
when I mean batteries, the actual battery for the node that's running your neighborhood.
But I have a power distribution amp in my crawl space. So if the power goes out on that.
So if the power goes out on that, then you should stay up and running. If the power goes out in the neighborhood and your cable modem is still on backup, then it all depends on how good the batteries are, the node that's feeding your neighborhood. But if it's just you locally and your system is still up and running, then, yeah, you should still be up and running. You should still work.
Okay, because I threw a UPS on the distribution amp in my rafter space because I thought that would need the power.
If I'm understanding that question properly, are we talking about actual commercial power or actual RF power?
No, commercial power.
Oh, okay, yeah. Then yeah, that still should work. If you lose your commercial power and you have a battery backup, if it doesn't go out in your neighborhood, and it's just, like I said, it's local to your house, you should stay up and running. I said that to a lot of people because typically, this is, like I said, the system itself is run on DC power. And generally, when you lose commercial power, your cable should still work if you have a generator. That should not go out.
So the interesting thing, in my neighborhood, when we had Irma, I saw a generator, you know, padlocked to a telephone pole, and they ran the wire up to the box on the pole.
Yeah.
So I believe that's how they were getting power to...
That's very typical.
Mm-hmm. And they had a guy there babysitting the generator.
Yeah, that's very typical. So, when those batteries aren't so... When the batteries that are feeding those nodes that aren't good enough, you'll have a generator truck that'll roll by and keep that going. That happened in my neighborhood just a little while ago. Matter of fact, just last year, we had a snowstorm, and we lost power for a little while. We lost everything because of the batteries and that's feeding my node ended up going out and not coming back.
Gotcha. My dumb question is, I don't think I actually pinned that much to the notes this week, or last 2 weeks. I'll give you guys the first dibs. Is there anything that you guys saw in the last couple weeks or happened in your own environments that you wanted to talk about?
I'm going to start dumb, because then we got something to build to. Orange Pie R1. Yeah, I got to click on the link here. So why the heck would you want something the size of an Orange Pi Zero with two Ethernet ports? Sounds good almost, right? But they're 100 meg.
What number in the notes, you know?
Oh, now I got a 608.
608. Yeah, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Well, it all depends on what you're trying to do. So with two Ethernet ports, you would think, oh yeah, let's do a router or maybe a firewall, but you got to have some really darn slow internet connection to do that with two 100 meg ports. Not everyone has blazing internet speeds, but some people do. So, I mean, yeah, this doesn't really work on that scenario.
But why would you want this? Who's like, you know what? Let's put two Ethernet ports on. And the market is?
Well, I'll say third world countries where they just don't have that kind of speed. Otherwise, maybe if you wanted some kind of hardwired network sniffer, I don't know, because it wouldn't be fast enough for even a local internal gateway. Okay.
You know what's funny is I was actually redoing my network just a little while ago, a few months ago, and it took me quite a bit to get everything settled. But I'm kind of thinking, okay, I'm going to do a lot of, you know, one gig interfaces for a lot of the PCs and devices in my house, but not everything needs a full gig. So even if I'm streaming high definition, still a 10100 port would be just as much bandwidth that I'm going to use instead of having a gig port. So it all boils down to what your main goal is, what you're trying to do. I think the gig ports really come in handy when you're sending large amounts of data, like movies, you know, shuffling movies from, you know, back and forth from one folder to the next, you know, the movies that are 4 gigs or 2 gigs big. But if you're playing games, even streaming games from an Xbox or something, you're not going to fill up a full 100 mega bandwidth. At the best, you'd be doing like 12 megs. I think 4K isn't even 100 meg.
I think streaming you just triggered 4K. Rich.
What's that?
I thought you would trigger Rich by saying not everything needs a gig.
No, and I'll tell you what, I came to that realization because when I was kind of reviewing my configuration in my data center in a drawer, I've got, you know, a gig router, gig switch, and the gig router has 4 ports on it. And then I plug, you know, one wire to my 8-port gig switch. And then I have stuff plugged into that. And then I started going through it. Well, pretty much every Pi device, other than the Odroid XU4 and the Pi Pro, the Banana Pi Pro, every other device is not gig Ethernet. So those are 2 gig Ethernet devices. Everything else is 10100. And then in the data center in a drawer there, I've got like an Orange Pi 0, a Pi 3, or 2 Pi 3s. I've got my Vonage, a couple other things, and they're all 100 megabit. And I'm like, crap, I'm going to bust out one of the 100 megabit hubs. And in fact, I said to myself, if I'm near a, and I didn't do it on my last trip because I did venture towards Detroit, where Troy, Michigan, in that area, and I did pick up a Pi Zero W for $10. And I said, you know what, if I'm in the store and they've got an 8-port, you know, 100 meg switch, I'm going to pick one up for all of the slow devices on my network.
Right, and I can think of one legitimate use case for this device. Okay, it has 2 NICs of 100 meg. 110, but it also has a Wi-Fi adapter. Now, I don't expect the Wi-Fi to be great, but hypothetically, I could have it set up as almost like a bridge or a extension to my network to where, hypothetically, out in the shed, I don't get wired in internet, but I have 2 things out there that don't have wireless on it where all they have is wires that can come out of them. I could take this device, set the wireless part to connect to my internal network and then be its own DHCP kind of thing and give out wired Ethernet to 2 devices. I mean, that's literally the only kind of truly fundamental function I can see for this little device. And I'll say, here's my only worry. This is an Orange Pi. Everything is really close together.
And yeah, they always run hot.
And they run stinking hot. If it's cheap enough, I would run it just to see how it runs. And it looks like $13.90, $14, $4, $20 total after shipping, at least in this reviewer's case for this. If you need 2 Ethernet NICs and Wi-Fi on board, and that's your requirements for a project, then I guess this makes sense. But I don't know of any normal use case.
Okay, so the other use case you could is like WISP, so wireless internet service provider. So maybe you're picking up the hotel Wi-Fi or something like that, and you wanted to share it out to some plug-in type devices. That you could do.
True, I didn't think about that. And this does only have 1 Ethernet chip, it says, on the board, if I look at this board right. So that's why they're only 110 10 100 NICs because they only have one chip on board to handle the networking. If they had 2 gig, my guess is you would never even get close to a gig speeds on it. It uses micro USB for power. To me, the real limiting thing is only 256 megs of RAM, which makes it sound more like an open WRT or DDWRT type device instead of a full-fledged computing device.
Yeah, and again, other than a hotel type situation, that's kind of a tough niche. And by the way, I picked up at Micro Center, I think they're Tenda N300. It's got 4 ports on the back. One's the WAN port and 3 LAN ports. And I think I paid like $9.99 when it was on sale. So I've got a thing with a power supply, a case, antennae, the whole shoot and match. And it does the whole WISP routine for me. And, you know, that's part of my geek bag when I'm on the go. So, yeah, paying 20-something bucks to roll your own without a case, without a power supply, without blah, that's a tough sell.
Yeah. I'll say, to me, the only thing that actually caught my eye this week and got me a little giddy. First, I'll say just a little update on at least my usage of the ROCK 64. It's working fine. I'm using it as a third desktop in my streaming setup. I have my main rig where I connect to all the other hosts. I have my second desktop. First one is my 7-year-old laptop. The second one is my desktop that's doing all the streaming for it. And then my ROCK 64 is showing me the status of the stream. And if we have a live chat going, I can see that. I'm really liking the ROCK 64. The ROCK 64 has a USB 3 on it. So I'm going to see if I can use that for something is my logic. Because all I ever do is come down here, tap the power button once, let it boot, do the updates, run the browser, load the page, watch the status of the stream, and that's it. I want to do more with it. This is a very functional computer. I need to use it as such. So I'm going to figure out how to use that a little bit more. So far, this is really good bang for the buck. I'm not going to say it's Odroid XU4 level of competency, but for a total price, I want to save just under 60 bucks. I think it's a great price. And the next one to talk about was line 606 in the note, I believe. This comes with a disclaimer, I guess is the best way to put it. Nothing about this is finalized. Nothing of this is in stone. Right now, this is not the final specs. They said they could shift the specs to try to hit more of a target price, but it's the Odroid N1 board. And this is, again, the ROCK chip RK3399. We didn't talk about this board last time, right?
I don't know. I think we talked about a similar board. But anyhow, if we did talk about it last time, who cares? Let's talk about it again.
Okay. I'm 99% sure we didn't, because we didn't go over these ports, is my logic. This is in the same vein as the Odroid XU4, except that has a Samsung Exynos processor on it. Exynos is one of the 3 big boy ARM processors. ROCK is doing everything in its power to try to become one of those powerhouses in the ARM market for pure performance and speed. The RK3399 is its latest chip that a couple people are hopping on really quick. Odroid is trying to hop on it again real quick. There's a square board with that 8-core processor on it. I believe it's 4 fast, 4 slow. It might be 2 slow, 4 fast cores. I cannot exactly remember. But it has a DC jack, the tube connector, barrel connector. But it also has 2 USB 3 ports on it. That alone is big. We haven't seen that really a lot. It also has what looks like 2 full SATA ports.
SATA 3. And it says, using native SATA implementation via PCIe Gen 2 to SATA 3 interface.
Yeah, now what that means is you're not going to need specially tweaked drivers to get the SATA up and running, which should make development easier and development cycles easier for them when they're doing the OS for this. I don't know how easy it is to do the processor, because that's going to be the hard part, which we will know as users very quickly after this board gets launched, 3 weeks, 6 weeks afterwards, how many other people are posting their own versions of the operating system, you know, tweaked for this or tweaked for that. This is, the best way I can put it, a beefy, low-end board. And by low-end, I mean price. Their target is to be less than $100, but it looks like if they go with the 4-gig RAM version, I believe it was like $120. Either way, the announcement looks like it either is coming or was just made. This is the board that I can see being a desktop replacement like for at least 80% of the normal users out there.
So, and I just want to cover what it has. I mean, I'm trying to think of what it doesn't have other than dual gig Ethernet. It looks like it doesn't have Wi-Fi. But what it does have, you got the two SATA 3 ports, you got two USB 3.0 ports, you got gig Ethernet, you've got HDMI. If it had double HDMI or double like gig Ethernet, I'd be like, holy crikey. You know, this is definitely, it's pam-jacked with everything you want.
Yeah, and of course it has HDMI with 4K output. And it has physical buttons for power and reset. I'm sorry to emphasize that every time, but to me that's a big thing.
Oh, and I forgot, I didn't mention eMMC. Like on my hit list, it's always eMMC, USB 3.0, SATA port, gig Ethernet, and eMMC is definitely, you know, a big win.
eMMC is a little expensive, though, too. I mean, it's worth the money. It's just, it is expensive.
Yeah, it's one of those things, if you can afford to get as an add-on to a board, you will see most of the time a performance increase, as far as my experience tells me. Also, it also does have USB 2.0 two ports, and the reason to me it has those two ports is, like you said, there is no Wi-Fi, but there's also no Bluetooth built on. So if you're a person that needs to have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, then I highly encourage you to find the most open source friendly version of those things and buy them. I'm sure Odroid or Hard Kernel will have their own, but if you go on Amazon, you can find very open versions of those for less than like $6 a piece, so it's not really something you have to worry about being overly expensive.
I noticed the 4-pin old school hard drive power on there. What do you think that's for?
Power.
Is that the power of the board?
Yep. Yeah, power supply is 12 volt 2 amp.
No, that's not really? Power. No. The power supply to power the board is right next to the HDMI. That's for the power to power the board. That you what you would use is the old IDE to SATA cable to power the external drives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm 99% sure. I'm not positive. I'm just 99%
sure. You
know
what? Okay. Now that you say it, I think you're right, man. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, because at least one of my computers I have now, desktops, I believe that's how the SATA gets its power. How on the more modern boards you have the small plugs right there next to one another for the data and one for the power. I believe that is for power.
For the data.
Yeah. But as you can see, there's like three sockets down there in that corner. The one is very tiny. I'm guessing that's battery backup. The one next to it, I have no idea. And then there's the bigger 4-pin, which is like the old school hard drive.
The Molex.
Yeah. Okay, that's what it is. The big 4-pin one is going
Molex,
to split
that's
off.
What it was.
Yeah, two power, two hard drives if needed.
Sweet. Yeah.
I can't design a damn thing for my 3D printer. I'm hell-bent if I can't find something comparable, I'm going to figure out how to use the damn design tools and design something for this board, because I can see myself buying this board like the first week it's available.
Well, I told you, I whacked out the Upboard Squared case in near no time, because I had the 3D model of the board itself. So I basically, you know, put the box around that, used it as a cutter to get all the ports, opened up some space around it, and my first print was right. I was shocked.
Gotcha. I know it's going to take me a couple prints. It looks like at least CNX Software, which is, to be honest, been covering mini computers longer than I have. I know that. They are expecting the high-end version of the board with 4 gigs of RAM to be about 110, and the low-end version with 2 gigs of RAM to be around $75. I just got to say, if this thing performs like I expect it to, those are very fair prices.
Hey, and you know what? Odroid's got the collateral. They've done a lot of good work. The XU4, the C2, they got a lot of great devices. They're definitely coming. I'm definitely getting a 4 gig version of this if it comes out.
Well, yeah. And my old stomping ground, a Meradroid, is my go-to for these devices always. They've already put out stuff on social media, and they say right now if you go to ameradroid.com, get on the list and win a Odroid N1 if you just sign up right now, which, of course, you're signing up for other emails to come into your inbox. The first prize is a Odroid N1. The second prize is a 64-gig eMMC module, Rich. And third prize is a 128-gig SanDisk micro SD card. You can't go wrong as far as I'm concerned.
Nice. What would you guys use yours for?
So right now I'm using my Odroid XU4 as my Plex, etc. server. So I'm running like four or five different things on it. And I did notice I got a Raspberry Pi 3 here, and I have it set up with Plex Sonar Radar. And I was seeing the temperature, you know, the thermometer pop up on the monitor. So I just got the heat sinks for it. But something, you know, I'm not sure if Plex is... You know, or I should say the other way around. I'm not sure if the Raspberry Pi 3 is a great Plex unit. Maybe with a heatsink and a fan, or maybe with just a heatsink, or maybe a better case with more air going through it. I don't know. But that's something I would think about maybe swapping out. So I would keep that at home for my Plex, etc. server, and take my Odroid XU4 on the road with me.
I can't tell you what I would use it for, Brian. Except my mobile rig. I come here, I connect, and then when I go to work, I bring it to work. I have a monitor, keyboard, mouse just sitting there by itself. I can connect it to that and use it as a mobile computer, in air quotes. I could see using it for a utilitarian purpose, like a desktop-like thing, but it has so much horsepower in it. I don't know what I couldn't stack on top of it and have it run pretty damn smooth. It does look like, if you look at the website for a Meradroid, it says they do not expect it to ship until an estimated June 2018. So we got time. We got time. Would you have any particular use case for this, you think?
I'm looking more like a front-end video media server, or even just a full desktop running Linux. Yeah, I can't see running Windows on this, but... Yeah, a full desktop running Linux with a couple of SATA hard drives, SSD drives would be perfect.
And that's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, okay, you know, a lower end desktop type device, and I'm good with that. Or because CrashPlan's coming to an end, and I'm like, you know, if I just have that as NFS storage or something like that, and set up Duplicati. Maybe I could run everything.
Yeah, and I'll say it like this. 4 gigs of RAM, it should run fine almost any type of use case. As far as I know, at least you still cannot download a ARM version of Windows, so there is no Windows, as far as I can tell, going to be on this thing anytime in the future. What I can see, honestly, a very high-end media streaming / gaming machine. This thing, if it has the right emulator on it, I cannot see it having a problem even with right now N64. Nintendo 64 is one of the ones that a lot of mini computers have a hard time with. I could see this device just having no problem at all running N64 games, or even something more advanced like maybe even PlayStation 2. As everyone gets older, I can see more people wanting to play PlayStation 2 games or, you know, a higher-end N64 games on their TV without having to go buy a separate device for it. If I could go from Kodi streaming from here, go from YouTube, go from Netflix, go from Hulu right into that playing classic games, I think it would be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a great use case.
Very cool, very cool. Did you guys have any other links in the notes that caught your attention?
I think I want to talk about Diet Pie a little bit. I'm not sure if they're up to 161 right now, but basically between 159 and 160, there's no upgrade path. So you got to nuke and pave, basically.
Yeah. And there was one disappointment about Diet Pie. Oh, Orca screen reader. I had a really nice guy, Angelo, from Carolina, contact me. And here's the thing. I have a fair amount of experience dealing with blind users, Jonathan Nadu, so I know sometimes they need assistance just getting things set up. Once you get it set up, they're fine. But he was asking about mini PCs to run Orca on it. And Orca's in the default Debian repo, so basically any mini computer should be able to run Orca just fine. The problem becomes they flash an OS to a microSD card, then they boot it. There is no Orca at first boot. So I told Angelo, if you decide to get the Odroid XU4, was to me the one I suggested for the best performance that you can get right now without a wait. ROC64 is hard to buy. Raspberry Pi 3 is not the best performing device for the dollar. The Odroid C2, I actually ranked higher, and I said, if you get either one of them and you need Orca to launch at boot, let me know. And what I would do is go download Diet Pie, download it myself, burn it to a card, put it on the device, boot it up, manually do an apt-get, install Orca, and then flash it back to an IMG file and send him that, because Diet Pie has no Orca, which blows my frigging mind. This Diet Pie has everything nobody needs, but something that a lot of people in this world would find very useful, they don't have. So I'm going to gingerly ping them on Twitter and see if I can get a positive response back.
Okie doke. So I'm on the Diet Pie Twitter site, and they say February 18th, 6.2 has been released. Now, I did set up two brand new Diet Pies, so I don't know if 6.2 is equivalent to release 162. I'm guessing it is, because I know I saw there was an update when I was doing the 160 install, that there was an update that came after it. The two Raspberry Pis that I have here that I was running 160 on, I have off right now, so I can't tell you about a multi-week test on any of this. The only thing I can tell you is I did save my script, the dietpie.txt, for the install when I originally installed the Plex server that I brought with me, which was version 159. That script did not run. Now, I don't know if it was a problem copying and pasting it from Google Docs back to the Diet Pie when I burned the microSD card, but when I did hand fill it out, it worked. So I can't exactly tell you what was wrong, but it did seem to eventually work.
Gotcha. And the thing I was going to throw out there before I forget, because I'm not sure I made it clear the last time. The Odroid XU4 is one of the mini computers that when I looked into it, it is not easy to put operating systems on the eMMC. The ROC64, almost all of their operating systems I saw, you can download SD card versions or SD card for eMMC versions, which means you put them on the SD card, you connect both the drives, you boot it up, and it copies it over to the eMMC. On the Odroid XU4, that just simply is not the case. And because you can go to places like Lakka, L-A-K-K-A, and download their Odroid version of the software, they don't have that kind of form or function. So I had to go off of Ameridroid, I believe is where I went, where I bought a very simple eMMC to micro SD adapter, and it was literally like $4. And all I do is I just pinch snap the eMMC onto the one side of this little mini card, and then just stick it into my regular SD card holder, and then put it in my computer, and it reads it just like an SD card. I burn to it just like it's an SD card. I put the eMMC back in the device, and everything just worked fine. So if you do get an eMMC, there might be a little extra cost you have to spend on to get everything up and running the way you like.
Okay, one more thing about that door. The technique is a little, there's a couple more steps in there, and part of, I do blog and I do videos, so I remember how to do things. The Odroid XU4, I did make a video, So if you go to flyingrich.com and look up my YouTube channel from there, there's an Odroid XU4 video, How to EMMC Boot. Because you, if I recall correctly, you actually have to put the Android on, and then you can do another OS.
No, not on mine, no. You just, there's a physical switch on the side. I switch the EMMC, I take out the SD card, I put the EMMC on, and it just boots.
But to get that onto the EM, okay, I got you.
Yeah, with using their version of Android to get it installed, you do have to do that. I don't want to say a trick boot, but it's kind of like a trick boot. You have to trick it into booting to one, and then it copies it over to the other. Using a third-party thing like Latka, or I believe actually RetroPie, they don't support that. So you literally got to take the EMMC off, connect it to a computer by alternate means, and copy your OS on that way. Now, on the plus side, if I want to write anything to an EMMC card, I don't have to worry about, is the pin in right? Do I have them both connected? Do I have to do this at a certain time? Do I have to do any? No, just pull the EMMC out, stick it on that, put it in a computer, burn to it. And I should be good. Okay.
Kind of good.
There wasn't anything else in the notes that super stuck out to me. What about you guys?
Well, just, I guess it's worth a final talk. It says Apple in the future may be having ARM processors along with the Intel processor, and it mentioned security. Not sure I get that.
Well, right now, I want to say in the non-mobile place, Apple has 5 models being sold. There's the Mac, technically speaking, MacBook, MacBook Air. They have the trash can looking thing. The TV, Apple TV, and they have something else. What I read days after I saw this article said already 2 of those platforms have essentially, if you remember, we're old, Rich. We used to remember the MX processor, which was a co-processor that did all the multimedia. Right. It wasn't the main processor, but it was on the board. It was next to it. Same kind of thing. They already have ARM co-processors on their Intel boards on 2 of them. And I guess I can see what they mean by security. If you saw the release of iBoot and you saw things like that, the way that they're doing certain security measures are not in like assembly firmware level code, but they're actually writing programs, embedded programs to handle a lot of this security thing. So the only thing I can think is they're going to handle it some way like that. I will say Apple does try to do more security before they get in trouble than other companies. So it wouldn't shock me if what they're doing is actually a smart thing that other companies will have to sooner or later pick up the same kind of thing.
Okay, right. Yeah, there's a couple of chips that are different in an Apple motherboard. I know there's SMC and a couple of other things that happened during the boot. And that could be what they're using it for.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's beyond UEFI or it's just something in a secure boot kind of fashion. But I do know that everyone is going to have to do a lot more fist fighting to stay ahead of the curve because security ain't getting any easier. You know, last couple of months we've seen some really stupid bad things, and when quantum computing actually becomes real, it's going to be fun watching them all trying to figure out ways to stay ahead of that without it costing a fortune.
So we're talking about security with these Apple devices. Is this something that's going to be running at boot or running on a consistent basis alongside with the OS?
I'll say my guess is, knowing them, it's going to be running the entire time in the background, doing everything from DRM, digital rights management kind of thing, to high-def copy protection kind of thing, and what's running on the computer. Because Apple has at least publicly acknowledged viruses and malware and infestation and unwanted wear on their platform is a real thing. I wholeheartedly expect them to handle it in a more mature fashion than Microsoft has, and it might be part of their solution.
That's kind of a good idea. I was thinking thinking the same things along the lines of bringing the security a lot closer to the actual device from a network standpoint and having something plugged in line with the PC, but having it on the board makes it even better sense with a separate processor all on its own.
Well, I don't know if you remember, like 2 years ago, McAfee released like a almost like a concept car level device, and what it was it stuck in your I/O chain. So between the motherboard and the hard drive, there was a device you would put in its place. It was only able to be written to by very secure measures. But what it did was basically everything going down the cable to the hard drive or everything coming off the hard drive, it would read. And if it picked it up as unwantedware, malware, virus, or whatever, it stopped it. And they said they can see a time in the future where you're not going to be able to defeat a virus from within the same operating system that it's running. So maybe they're trying to do this kind of side monitoring just on the board itself instead of in the chain of the hard drive. I'll say I find it almost fascinating when their code gets out for like iBoot and when people go back through it and they discover the simple yet elegant way that they are locking things down. It explains to me a lot why what they do in the realm of security is as successful as it is.
I agree. Put it right on the actual network interface.
Yeah, it can't be any worse than Spectre or Meltdown.
Speaking of security, I was perusing the interwebs and looking on Amazon, and I happened to stumble across a PF Sense device that I thought was at a pretty decent price from a secure standpoint. So PF Sense is a unified threat management utility. It's a software utility that you can download for free online. You can pretty much put it on a PC with two network cards by specific hardware or a white box, they usually call that in the network industry. This is just a blank hardware where you have multiple switch ports on it. You can turn it into a router, in a sense. Well, this particular device is the NetGate SG1000. It's a micro firewall. It's pretty tiny. I'd say it fits about the size of in your palm. It's a solid-state device, low-power unit, and with the power of PS Sense in a low-power consumption device, this really packs a big punch for someone that's looking to add security to your network without spending a ton of cash. So this is on sale for $150 on Amazon right now. And PF Sense is a little difficult to use, I would say, from a novice standpoint, but there's a ton of information online on how to set it up, how to configure it, how to use it and things like that. And I recommend for someone who's looking to add some security without dropping a ton of cash, this is a really good piece of equipment. Instead of building your own, you can get something that's already installed and up and running. All you guys do is plug it in and go through the setup.
Brian, what's the normal price on that? Is it like $250 or how much is it?
For something like this?
Yeah, I know I've seen this before, and I thought it was up there price-wise.
I'm not too sure, actually. I haven't really researched the price, whether it would if it dropped or bounced around a little bit. This has been hovering around $150 for a little while.
Because basically, it's a Raspberry Pi 3-sized board with two gig Ethernet ports. I believe it is an ARM-based board, to the best of my knowledge. I think I've seen some information on the PF Sense page about this. And PF Sense they make their binary. Is it their binary or their source available for x86? But I don't think you get the ARM-based code available.
Now, I haven't really been poking around. I when I installed it, it was on an x86 board.
I don't know, but I'll say this thing is damn near sexy. It has to be an ARM board is my logic. Just looking at the physical size of it, I've never seen an x86 board remotely close to this small and being this open. Yeah, it says it's a ARM Cortex A8 600 megahertz. So here's one of the logic things. For a lot of routers, gateways, intrusion detection stuff, you don't need fast processors. You basically take all of the smarts, you dump it to RAM, and then you have the network ports go fast, and they just process it everything like through RAM. It has 4 gig eMMC flash on board with 512 megs of RAM. For network appliances, that is plenty of stuff with extra headroom, and it even has a VPN built in, so you can use it as a secure gateway to come into a network. It says a $99 value. I gotta say, if I was starting up like a small business, or I was doing management of businesses for other people doing their tech thing, this is the kind of device I would tell them. They don't even have a choice. When you buy my service, you pay this much. I don't even explain to them what it is, and I just go and I put this on their network. And this is how I get into their network. This is how I secure everything else down. This is how I do all their updates. Here's how I do all their support. They don't need to know anything about its inner workings.
The main thing with something like this is when it comes to security, it's the deep packet inspection. So it all depends on how many users you actually have in the network, which will give you an idea of how fast you can actually send and receive data, and you know what that'll do for you. That's where the money is, really, when you're doing the deep packet inspection and the throughput. So if you want, you know, high throughput, you're definitely going to need a much faster processor, and that's where they stick you when you're looking at firewalls. Firewalls are very expensive, especially, you know, if you're looking for a commercial firewall. But I've recently installed Untangled, and that's been working out really good. I ended up finding an older machine that was kicking around and dropping Untangled on that. And I got to tell you, I'm really, really pleased from what they're doing. It's really good. Just the amount of data that you can pull from your network, it's pretty good. And they allow you to see all the data in a really good graphical user interface as well too. And they've got some malware and antivirus protection as well too on the box. Before it even gets to your network, it filters some of that off. So I take a look at that too, Untangled in conjunction with pfSense. I don't know if we talked about Untangled before on the show. I was looking in the notes. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we did or not. I know we talked about it on Linux for the Rest of Us. Untangled is a really polished tool where you can do a lot of network administration from a central console. It is one of the better looking all-in-one solutions I think I've ever seen. The free version does a hell of a lot. I know if you pay a little bit of money, you also get their support. So yeah, I'll encourage anybody, if you need like one central place to do all of your network management, whether it be setting up FTP servers, SSH servers, logging users onto it, doing DHCP for everything, doing MAC address reservations, all kinds of network administration tools, you need to check that out, because if it does fit your needs, if I remember correctly, it is well worth the price.
Oh, 100% door. And even if you're not doing all those things that you mentioned, I highly recommend having a firewall in your house. I mean, a lot of people rely on their routers, and it's not really gonna cut it. Especially when you have a lot of the smart TVs. I was just watching the news just a while ago, and we know that smart TVs aren't really protected that well, and a lot of those devices that are on our network, they're not made for security focused. So they leave the back door open in a sense. And when you're adding a lot of spy devices on the network and things like that, if you're not careful, you can leave the front door open. So this is something to put in and have some peace of mind. It's not 100% secure, but at least you have some peace of mind.
Very cool. Okay, guys. I want to remind everyone, if you want to contact us, it's minipc@podnuts.com. Worst case scenario, send me an email to mail@podnuts.com with mini PC in the subject line, and I'll make sure it gets out to all the other hosts. You can also leave us a voicemail, 7076-PODNUT. I'm going to call that, make sure it's still working. Or you, the listener, could. We also have a Patreon over at patreon.com/miniPCshow. If you want direct access to this show as it's being streamed live, that is the easiest way to do it. You also get invited to our Discord server and or Mattermost server if you want to chat. If you cannot afford a Patreon and you still would like to watch this show live, just let me know. I'll get you on our Discord server or Mattermost server, whichever one you like, and I share the link out that way. Number one thing I ask everyone to always do and never forget is to support those who support you. Now is the perfect time of year, if you don't do it already, to make it a habit. We're all getting ready to get tax money back. School is starting to wind down. Major holidays are becoming over with. Stress should come down in everyone's life. Brian, is there any parting words you would like to say?
May God be with you, and thank you for joining.
Very cool. Rich, do you have any last words?
Yeah, if you ever need any help with anything that's going on, you can find me at flyingrich.com. I've done a couple of Asus router videos and stuff like that, and a lot of people have been like seeking me out for information and tips on how to do the work, you know, do the upgrades.
Very cool, very cool. With that, I want to thank everyone, and we will talk to everyone in about a week.
Hi, this is Matt, the host of the MRP Tech Podcast. I'd like to invite you to listen to all the great shows on the PodNuts Tech Podcast Network. My show is themed Everyday Tech for Everyday People. You can take a listen over at podnuts.com or by subscribing to the RSS feed and downloading them directly. We hope you're enjoying all the great content here on the network. And as always, thanks so much for listening.